Please stand by. We're about to begin. Good morning to you all, and welcome to the 8th lecture of the 2017 Palliative Care Lecture Series. Hospice New Zealand would like to thank and acknowledge the Genesis Oncology Trust for their generous support and funding to deliver these free lectures. The lecture today will be recorded, and it will be available on the Hospice New Zealand website. Please be aware that there will be an opportunity for questions at the end of the presentation. We would now like to introduce our guest speaker today, Dr. James Yap. James is the clinical director of Totara Hospital, Hospice South Auckland, and has been a consultant there for 6 years. James is also the co-founder and co-director of www.palliverse.com, a palliative care virtual community health practice. His interests include clinician leadership, the improvement of healthcare in general, especially palliative care. Welcome, James, and please go ahead.
Thank you, and good morning, New Zealand. Thanks, everybody, for coming here to listen to me on a wintry morning. It might still be dark in some places, maybe in the South Island. And palliverse.com is a virtual community of practice, just to get that across properly. So thanks for your attention. I'm going to be telling a few stories today, taking you through a bit of a journey about palliative care, going from the past to the present and possibly to future directions. And as I've written in the bio and everything, prepare to be challenged and to do some thinking, some self-reflection. So the story begins, two people's eyes meet across the floor, introductions are made, and something special is going to come of this meeting. Something special is going to start. This was how I felt in fourth year of med school way back in 1997, about 20 years ago, when I first met Dr. David Perez. This was on Ward 8C of the Needham Public Hospital, which is the oncology hematology ward. So I met Dr. Perez, medical oncologist, and soon after had my first experience in palliative care. This was getting to know a patient with recurrent lymphoma who had previously been treated successfully 10 years ago, but the lymphoma had relapsed, come back, and this time was not responding to treatment. So that was the first palliative care patient I ever met and followed his case through. And that really made an impact on my fourth year medical student mind, and also made an impact for my future career. The other experience from that year that I remember is having a morning at the local community hospice. That's Otago Community Hospice. It's back in George Street. And just spent the morning there, but I got to find out that death does not have to be so chaotic or traumatic. My previous experience of death at that stage had been in the back of an ambulance at 3 a.m. in the morning in the Otago countryside, performing CPR on a person with a ruptured abdominal aorta repair. So that was pretty traumatic. But the experience at hospice on that morning was one of where a person had died, but everything was pretty calm. The person's spouse was very calm. It was all very gentle, and it was a nice experience. So that sort of lit a spark in me, thinking that maybe death doesn't have to be so traumatic, so chaotic, and is part of the reason that, you know, I'm here today. But enough about me. Getting to the lecture at hand, so slide 2, please. If you were lucky enough to be at Totara Hospice, South Auckland, you could well be enjoying a barista-made coffee at our Cafe Araha. As you can see, we've got free Wi-Fi available, so if there's any single ladies or men in the audience, you know, come here for some free Wi-Fi, and apparently we're getting husband installed later on this year. And dogs are welcome in the outside dining area when on their leads. That applies to husbands as well. Thank you. And I have given this talk before as part of the Leukemia and Blood Cancer New Zealand Winter Workshop. So I gave this talk around the country 4 times in the month of June. So if you've never been to this website before, check it out. Leukemia and Blood Cancer are a support group who help to support patients and their families and I've met quite a few of their actual support workers, and great bunch of people, great help for hematology patients and also for hospice patients who have hematological conditions. So please check out the website and get to know your local Leukemia and Blood Cancer New Zealand support people. Next slide, which is slide 4. So I just want to say a quick dedication to the team at Middlemore Hospital. So thank you to Nurse Betty and Flossie and to Dawn, as with everybody else in the country. I hope you've warmed up your fingers, because you'll be clicking on lots of slides. It's about 55, but we'll get through them quickly and leave time for questions at the end. Also wanted to say a personal note of thanks to the hematological services that are out there. You are currently looking after two of my blood relatives, and thank you for all your hard work and for keeping people alive, including my own relatives. So thank you very much. It's from my heart to you, to your hearts. Slide 5. So here's some ground rules. PC means palliative care to me, and those who know me know it doesn't really mean politically correct. So some of the things that I might say might challenge you, might confront your own thinking, but I'm not trying to be rude or negative. I'm just trying to get some points across. And the next part is where we try and be a bit interactive. Usually I've got an audience in front of me. Here I've got a couple of computer screens, so I can't really see your reactions. But the next part I'll try to make a bit interactive. So what I want you to do is focus on why. Why are you actually here? So just spend about 15 seconds thinking about that. Why are you here on this world? Why are you here listening to me at this time of the day? Why are you doing the job that you're doing? So about 15 seconds. And then I want you to turn around to the person next to you and just quickly give each other 15 seconds each to explain why are you here. Go for it now. Okay, that was not enough time to really have a good talk, but you can talk to each other after this presentation as well. So why am I here? Well, my reason for being on this earth, I think, is that I want to change the world. I want to make the world to be a better place for dying people. So that's my reason why. And take home homework for you is to think about why you're here, why you keep on doing the jobs that you do, because the jobs aren't easy, but you keep on doing them anyway, because you want to make a difference. So just keep that in mind as you listen to the rest of this talk. Going to slide 7, please. So slides will be available soon on Hospice New Zealand website. And, of course, I want to give thanks to Hospice New Zealand and the Genesis Oncology Trust for allowing me to present this talk today. So slides will also be available on Palliverse on our various addresses, www.palliverse.com. We're on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, you name it, we're going to be there. And we'd like to promote something called hashtag PhonePal, so that's free open access medication palliative. It's a concept where us in palliative care and our specialities can share our knowledge, share our resources for free online, so that people in places where they don't have such great access to resources or textbooks as in other countries, third world countries, will be able to access things for free online. Dream is to one day have a open source palliative care textbook curated and available online for everybody to make use of. So if anyone's interested in that, you can contact me about how to get your stuff onto hashtag PhonePal. So going to slide 8, as I said before, I will try to challenge your mindset. It may be uncomfortable, so if you're screaming, look for the nearest exit and the nearest toilet, because some of the things that I'll be talking about may be a bit challenging for you. Going to the next slide, slide 9. So I want you to prepare for takeoff. Make sure your tray table's stowed, seatbelts are fastened, because we're going to go on a bit of a ride through time and space, and starting with slide 10. So this is the first of the Beatles song titles that I'll be using, so Get Back. So I'm going to take you right back to ancient Greece, so thousands of years ago. On the left hand of the slide, you see a centaur. Don't see many of those around in South Auckland, I have to say. Occasional llamas and horses, but not no centaurs. So that centaur is actually Chiron, and a bit of a mythical figure who was shot by Hercules, shot with a bow and arrow, and he was wounded. And this wound never healed, so he was the original wounded healer that you might have heard of. So Chiron was a healer back in ancient Greece, and on his right hand you see a little boy, and that represents Asclepios, also known as the Greek god of healing, or he became the Greek god of healing. So on the right-hand side, we've got a very familiar symbol to those of us in healthcare, a snake pulled around the staff, and it's the staff of Asclepios, representing healthcare. And back in those days in ancient Greece, people would go to the temple of Asclepios to get healed, and there'd be non-poisonous snakes slithering around them as part of the healing process. You know, I say healing because things were not necessarily cured. Diseases weren't cured, but people would be healed. And part of that healing could also include, you know, end-of-life care. Some could say that the original medicine was actually palliative medicine, because back in the old days, we didn't have fancy things like antibiotics or surgical techniques or medical technology. A lot of the medicine that was applied was actually palliative medicine, as in trying to ease suffering and help people get through tough times. So just keep that in mind. The next slide, slide number 11, I want to hold your hand. That's what some people think palliative care is all about. But that's not all that we do, of course. We're quite keen on te whara tapa whā. We're wanting to provide a holistic care experience covering tinana, which is physical, hine ngaro, which is emotional, wairua, spiritual, and also whānau, familial or social. So all aspects of the person we want to try and cover in the care that we provide. So holding people's hands is not all that we do, but sometimes that is the best thing that we can do. Be with people through their difficult times, through their difficult journeys. So the next part of our time travel journey, slide 12. Yesterday, great song by the Beatles. Sing along if you know the words. So on the left-hand side of the slide, you see people in gas masks. And I usually ask the audience, so what's going on there? This is 1914 to 1918. During the so-called Great War, Great Loss of Life War, World War I. So I was asking, what's going on in the slide there? People with gas masks on, even the dogs got a gas mask on. What were they trying to protect themselves from? And someone in the audience will clearly say, oh, nitrogen mustard gas. Well, did the gas mask actually work? The gas masks were okay, but the trouble is that nitrogen mustard would also penetrate the skin, so the dog and the person in the photo would not be protected from the gas. Going forward to the Second World War, 1942, we've got a patient named J.D. who had very advanced lymphoma. So something that they had found with people exposed to nitrogen mustard back in World War I was that anyone with lymph glands, with swollen lymph glands, the actual size of lymph glands would reduce. So this was remembered way back in 1942. Someone called J.D. developed advanced lymphoma. He looked like he was about to die, so they treated him with something called Substance X. This was at 10 a.m. on the 27th of August, 1942, a particular date. And we keep in mind, that what was Substance X? Someone bright in the audience will usually say, nitrogen mustard, that's right. The same substance that was killing lots of people in the First World War was being used as experimental treatment in 1942, in the Second World War. And fast forward to 1948, and you see this molecular structure on the right-hand side, and some very smart people in the audience will be able to identify the structure to be for Ambucil, and this was the first of the IV chemotherapies. So what's the relationship between chlorambucil and nitrogen mustard? Well, a very clever person had managed to change the chemical structure of nitrogen mustard to other substances. Yes, first there was Dijon mustard, and then it became Grey Poupon mustard and whole grain mustard. Eventually it became something called chlorambucil, which was a bit less toxic, still toxic, but not as toxic as nitrogen mustard. So this was actually the first of the chemotherapies, and the first time that chemotherapy had been used to fight a cancer. Going forward to slide 13. So, as you remember, back in those days, we didn't have antibiotics, we didn't have surgical techniques or medical technologies, so death was actually something that communities experienced all of the time, not like the world that we have today. Sometimes you wish that things wouldn't ever change, like the Beatles' title, Don't Ever Change. Nowadays, we've got lots and lots of different treatments for lots of different cancers, including hematological cancers. Got lots of MIBs. Yes, they can be worth it. Thalidomide has made a comeback as an anti-cancer agent. And we've also got things like Mad Magazine. If you notice on the right-hand side, the Beatles are down there on the bottom of the... They're holding up the guru, so it has got something to do with the Beatles, after all. So I, myself, can't keep up with all the new developments of the targeted therapies, you know, whatchamacallit, MIB, who's the whatchacallit, MIDE, and what's that, a MAB? But our good friends in hematology and oncology can update us, so it'd be great if we can all learn together. Going on to slide 14, where I'll start telling the next story that I have to share. So I've called the story The Ballad of John and Yoko, and it's a true story, but of course the names have been changed. And Studio 54, I'm not sure if you've seen the movie, I myself haven't, but this is just to remind me that the couple in question had been married for 54 years. And again, eyes met across the floor, introductions were made, and as soon as they shook hands, they knew that they were about to start something special. So I first met John at the age of 77, and at the time he'd been married to Yoko for 54 years, that had three children, grandchildren, and two great-grandchildren. So John was a retired train repairer, and not Thomas the Tank Engine, which Ringo Starr became the voice of, I mean, the narrator for later on, but a real train for the New Zealand Rail Service. So he worked away happily on fixing his trains, but as time went by, things got harder. Next slide, 15. Twist and Shout, this is to represent what happened to John about 6 years ago when he developed really bad back pain, which made him twist and shout. His body twisted and shouted in pain, writhing in agony at times. So this led to him going to see his doctor, ending up seeing hospital specialists, and eventually a diagnosis was made of not M&Ms, but light chain multiple myeloma. Ain't she sweet? It wasn't very sweet. John was in a lot of pain, a lot of symptoms right from the start. So myeloma was affecting him, his life, his quality of life, his family's quality of life. And slide 17, that's when he began the long and winding road of his treatments. Started off with 5 doses of Cyborg-X, went on to bortezomib, one of the MIBs that mentioned before, 3 cycles of BMP, 1 cycle of mefalan with prednisone. Eventually they got him into remission, and he stayed in remission for a number of years, which was really good. But it's a long and winding road that does, which can eventually lead to my door, to the palliative care door, but it didn't lead to that door until much, much later. Slide 18, please. Ticket to Ride, famous Beatles song, but it's a ticket to a roller coaster ride that people with life-limiting illness get. John relapsed in June of 2014. He needed CTD chemotherapy. Thalidomide was tried unsuccessfully. And thalidomide's cousin Lena was involved. Lena, thalidomide was used, and he responded well. This kept him out of trouble until December of 2016, December of last year, when myeloma came back with a vengeance, causing more pain, causing much decreased functional ability. John was started on clinical trial, KEYNOTE-185, which some of you in the audience will be very familiar with. Also tried on another cousin of thalidomide, pomalidomide, and dexamethasone. And unfortunately, this time around, he did not respond so well. He became more and more unwell, lost more and more weight, became less and less functionally able. Slide 19. You've Really Got a Hold on Me, another Beatles classic. Now, this is to illustrate the 6-year relationship that both the patient and clinicians have had with each other. And they both had a bit of a hold on each other, if we're to be absolutely honest. As I said, the relationship can be really intense. You see each other very, very often. At times of crisis, you know who to call. It can be an intense and very, very long relationship for both parties, both patients, their families, and the clinicians involved. Slide 20, please. So, John, at this stage, became a bit of a day tripper. But he wasn't going out for picnics with his family. He was going to the day-stay units, getting blood tests, getting infusions, transfusions, trying to maintain his quality of life for as much as possible. And just note that still at this stage, he hadn't been referred to palliative care or to hospice care at all. He was in and out of the hospital getting these interventions done. Next slide, slide 21, please. Here, there, and everywhere. That's what happened with John's myeloma, unfortunately. It started affecting many, many things, including his bone marrow. As you can see, this is an illustration of his complete blood count. Well, I graphed it out, actually. It might be a bit hard to see for you on the screens, but it shows a general downward trend. Neutrophils are in purple at the bottom, platelets in green, and in blue is his hemoglobin. So everything's trending downwards over a period of about 6 to 8 weeks. Next slide, please, slide 22. And I'm Only Sleeping is the Beatles song title. Where His Kidneys Only Sleeping? It was around about April of this year. His creatinine was rising, EGFR wasn't so flash. Was the myeloma now affecting his kidneys? That was the question that was asked. And over the course of the next 4 weeks, his renal function first improved and then started to deteriorate again. This meant that John was in and out of hospital for inpatient admissions a few times during this period, and at the very last admission, he was presented with the results of all the findings. It didn't look good. Things were looking as if he had bone marrow failure. There were no successful treatments that could be offered anymore. And thus, a conversation was had with the ward team and John and Yoko, where it was laid out that there were no further treatments available. But I think the people on the ward tried to do their best, but to John and Yoko, this is what it felt like. Slide 23, please. Hello, goodbye. So this is a picture from the Waterworld show at Universal Studios. It's the mariner being kicked off the jetty by the nasty character on the left-hand side. And that's how John and Yoko felt. They felt that they were falling. They felt that they had been pushed off a deck. They didn't know what to do. They'd had a very intensive and supportive relationship over the previous 6 years, and suddenly they felt slightly lost. Slide 24. "We felt so lost" was the quote from Yoko. They didn't know who to turn to, so this elderly couple, both in their late 70s, suddenly didn't know what to do. What they had been doing was they'd been on the waiting list to go into a independent apartment in one of the local residential care facilities. They've been waiting for this for the past year. They were about a week or two away from moving in, and they'd gotten this bad news. They didn't know what to do. They didn't know who to turn to for support. And they felt so alone. Page 25, please. Fixing a hole. There was a huge hole in their lives now, a void that they didn't know how to fill. On the slide itself, how we want the grief, how we want grief to work, we'd love it to be a straight line, but how grief actually works is it's a tangled mess. So they were actually grieving at this time. And one definition of grief could be that you're missing out on what you can no longer have. These include losses of function, but as we all know, with life-limiting illnesses, these losses continue to accumulate over time. And that's certainly what was happening with John and Yoko. Next slide, please. Slide 26. I just don't understand was what they were saying. This is a picture trying to represent despair. So we've heard about what grief is and the definition of grief. My definition of despair is you're missing out on what you could have had but didn't know what was going to disappear. As I said, they've been waiting 1 year to get into their new home. As we know of all of our patients, time is so precious. There had been some missed opportunities over the past 6 weeks, I think. So they were still waiting to get into their home, but eventually they did do so. I'll talk a bit more about that very soon. Slide 27. Call for help. Help, I need somebody. Classic Beatles hit. You notice next to the help in red, there's a T-30. This was the time of the first referral to palliative care services, to hospice services, and T-30 is indicating 30 days before actual death occurred. Next slide, please, slide 28. Hold Me Tight, another Beatles song that people might be familiar with. This is a quote from Yoko herself. Sometimes he doesn't want to be cuddled at all due to his discomfort. The couple who've been married for 54 years, but at times he couldn't bear to be cuddled because of his pain and discomfort. And this was pain and discomfort that he'd had for quite some time, including up to 6 years before when he was first diagnosed. Why is there a picture of a hospital bed? Well, this was part of the conversation when one of our hospice community nurses went out to see John and Yoko at home. Because of his decreasing functional abilities, the hospital bed was discussed and agreed upon so that John could mobilize in and out of bed in a more comfortable fashion. But hospital bed represents something else. Hospital bed actually represents a separation of the couple. They've been married for 54 years, sharing the marital bed for 54 years. So the introduction of a hospital bed into the home setting can be a huge thing for people. That means that they can no longer share a bed together. They might be able to still be in the same room on different beds, but this is a huge thing that we don't always think about enough. Unfortunately, things did start to get worse. We started managing his pain with more powerful medications, and we were making some progress there, but this was the first time that we'd met him, first time palliative care had met him 30 days prior to his death. Next slide, please, slide 29. I Am the Walrus is another Beatles song, which some of you may be familiar with, but the reason I'm using that is during this time, John's calcium went very high to level of 4 in mid-May. Hypercalcemia can cause lots of symptoms, including confusion. A person might have hallucinations. They might think that they're a walrus at this time. And as you can see, hypercalcemia was treated, and it did come down. Calcium levels came down, but as we go towards the right of the graph, things are trending upwards again. And right at the end of the graph is when John was first admitted into our inpatient hospice, T-9, so 9 days prior to his death. Slide 30, please. At this time, John and Yoko were still crying, waiting and hoping. They still weren't sure what to do. They had been in and out of the hematology day stay for infusions, transfusions, but actually when John and Yoko first came in, they thought they were just coming in for an infusion. But our staff who received John and Yoko, the ones who admitted them, had to have a very serious conversation with them about the big picture and what was happening. And the big picture was that John was getting more and more unwell. His bone marrow had failed. His calcium was going up again. These all signaled to us in hospice that he was actually heading towards possibly dying. And here's the other bit of the story that I haven't told you. One of the reasons that we got him into the hospice was that he had become acutely delirious, very, very unwell. But about 6 days prior to his admission was when he had finally moved into his new place, his new house. This was the first time that John and Yoko had lived in a new house or a new apartment. And it was lovely. It had been repainted. There was new whiteware. John really, really loved this place and was very proud of it. His kids and grandkids came to see him there. And the couple told me, well, actually Yoko told me that the youngest grandchild, I think a wee toddler, was happily exploring the whole place, climbing on the new tables, on the new furniture. And this was a place that John really loved, but he'd only been able to be there for 6 days. So he'd been waiting for a whole year, but he'd only been there for 6 days. So, as I said before, missed opportunities. But as I said, John came in quite a delirious state. Slide 31, please. He was having not just a hard day's night, but a week of hard days. A week of hard day's nights. Very delirious. Yoko and the rest of the family weren't quite sure what to do. So inpatient admission was arranged. And as you can see, the album title there is the Claypool Lennon Delirium. That's the band. One of the band members, of course, is John Lennon's son, Sean Lennon. Two Worlds is the title of the album. It's just been released a few months ago, so have a listen. It's something a bit different. But someone who's delirious may well be in two worlds. And how do we explain delirium at the possible end of life? Well, I always say it's either nature or a higher power trying to protect the person actually going through what could be the dying process. You know, nature or the almighty or whatever you want to call them don't want people to have the full HD, high definition, 3D experience of the dying process. So consciousness and cognition is clouded to protect the person actually going through the whole process of dying. So that is possibly what is going on at the very end of life for us humans. So John was very delirious. We decided to give him IV zoledronate. He'd had pomindronate a number of times before, but it wasn't really helping. Again, in the back of our minds was that he'd only been in his house for 6 days. We wanted to try to see if we could get John back so that he could get back to his house again. We'd give it a go. But we warned John and Yoko and the rest of the family that we might not have a successful result, and if that was the case, we'd have to prepare for end-of-life care. So that was done in as gentle a fashion as we could. So please go to slide 32. It was a state of misery for John and his family. And we're in the hospice. We're trying to help them out, not just from the physical point of view, but from the emotional, spiritual, and psychological points of view as well, trying to cover the whole person and the whole family. But it was a miserable time to be in this family. I've got a picture of the palliative care handbook and a link down the bottom. I'm hoping that in the future when I've got these slides up that you'll be able to click on the link and access the palliative care handbook. It's available for a free download from the hospice New Zealand website. It's really good, and it's 8th edition, 2016. You can download a PDF copy, and it will be really helpful for all the symptoms that we control in palliative care and in the end of life. And if you think about this, there's five main symptoms: pain, restlessness / agitation, breathlessness, nausea, respiratory secretions. There's a few other symptoms, and this little handbook covers them very nicely. Also, there's a list of all the medications that we use, written by some good people, and in its 8th edition, so make sure that you download a copy. It's really, really useful, and something that we'll be adding to / PhonePal. Thanks to Rod McLeod, who's given permission for that to happen. So, slide 33, please. That'll be the day that I die. Classic Beatles hit. And this is a slide to just advertise Te Ara Whakapere, which is a last days of life guidance tool developed by a whole bunch of good people and currently being considered to be the national document. In Auckland a couple of weeks ago, had a meeting with all the Auckland regional players and also good folks from Waikato Hospice and Hospital. We'd be quite keen to introduce Te Ara Whakapere in our regions, because we think that it's a great thing, and we'd like to follow in along with what Kate Grundy and the good folks in Canterbury are doing. So we're very keen to introduce this as our sort of last days of life document guidance tool in the Auckland and Waikato regions. So if anyone else is keen to join us, please get in touch. We'd love to work together with you. Collaboration is the name of the game. So folks in the hospitals, private hospitals, may be seeing this in the near future, and it's there to help with end-of-life care, just as the previous Liverpool Care Pathway did in public and private hospital institutions over the previous years. So something to look forward to. Next slide is slide 34. Can't Buy Me Love, another great Beatles song. And we've got a picture of Uncle Scrooge diving into a great vault full of his treasures, his money, and all that sort of stuff. Unfortunately, no matter how much money you have, despite all the great developments that we've had with targeted therapies, chemotherapies, all sort of therapies, regardless of your riches, you may not be able to buy medication which can help you. So does this leave people in the audience with a sense of failure? Is death actually a medical failure? That question going through your mind? Slide 35, please. Hurricanes currently are in the news in various places around the world, including in our own country. This little tornado just hit a poor Karangarau just yesterday. Hurricane Harvey, we've heard about Hurricane Irma. This slide is called Let It Be. Because sometimes if you're thinking about life-limiting illness, it's actually like a force of nature. What are we actually doing in medicine and healthcare? We're trying to control nature with our medications, with our surgical techniques, with our flash new medical technologies. As I said before, about 80 years ago, we didn't have all that stuff. People were still dying of simple infections. So death and dying was actually something that our communities experienced very, very often. Death in childbirth, death in infancy was very, very common. I was reading an economics book just the other day, and in the early 1700s, apparently the average life expectancy was about 24 years old. Amazing. And look where we are now. But death was actually part of life, of a community's life, but these days, because of all the developments, it's become much less of a thing that we see commonly in our own little communities and our own societies. Has death become medicalized? Question mark. Think about that for a second. So we're trying to control a force of nature, and that's what these life-limiting illnesses can be. Sometimes these illnesses can go through people's lives like a hurricane. It can blow things apart, not just the person's physical health, also their financial health, their social health. Family members may never be the same again. Their family unit, their world gets shaken by these forces of nature. So is death actually a medical failure, or is it just a part of life? Because despite all the advances in technology and in medicine and in healthcare, we have still not beaten death yet. So is it actually a medical failure, or is it just a natural part of life? That's what I want you to think about. Because, unfortunately, our patients do end up in dying states. They do end up dying, but we can help them through these difficult times. We can't make the times easy, but we can possibly make them less hard. But we need to work together to do this. The next slide is, we can work it out. We can work it out. So can we work it out between us? So palliative care and the other specialities, including hematology, can we get together? Not necessarily around the campfire, eating s'mores, singing, Oh Lord, Kumbaya. But can we get together and work out how we can provide better services to our shared patients? Next slide, please. Slide 37. Maybe we can do it with a little help from my friends. So I've got a slide with a bunch of huskies there. And no one's called Mush just yet, but there's a bunch of travellers on the back of that sled. And this is to illustrate that we need to possibly coordinate what we're doing, head together in the right direction, because if the huskies all run at different directions, that sled's not going very far. Who misses out? The passengers. And who are the passengers on our rides? The patients and their families. So maybe we need to, you know, get together, get coordinated so that we can provide a joint direction into the future to help out our shared patients. As you could see me now, previously I've worn a super team tie to these presentations. So it's a tie which is a picture of Superman, Steel and Superboy. Because that's my point. I want us to build super teams together for our patients, because together we can get them through this. Mush, mush, to the next slide, please, 38. Hey Jude. What's Hey Jude all about? Well, it's about taking a sad song and making it better. So, unfortunately, some of our patients will end up getting worse, dying. But that sad song, we can actually try and make it better with good palliative care input, with good support. And what I would love to see, my vision is one of cross-pollination. So we've got the hematology butterfly with the red on the wings and the orange of hospice palliative care butterfly. They're both sharing the same nectar and pollen from the same flowers. They're cross-pollinating, so it would be great if we could all learn together. And it's not just limited to palliative care and hematology, but to palliative care and aged care, palliative care and cardiology, respiratory. You're sort of getting my point. We need to work together with our specialities, get out of our shell a bit. We have so much to learn from each other. Next slide, please. 39, the end, another Beatles song title, and we are approaching the end of the lecture. You'll be happy to hear. But this is a book that has been doing the rounds all over the world. Atul Gawande, an American surgeon, also a writer. He's written some good books, but this is probably one of his best. Being Mortal, what's it about? I can give you a quick summary in about three lines. Humans will get old and become unwell. That's line one. Line two, people will need care, including good aged care, good residential care, and good palliative care. It will happen to us all. Line three is, the world needs to change the way that they deal with aging patients, very unwell patients. Palliative care needs to be considered as everybody's business. But, of course, Atul puts it in much more eloquent terms than I have, but it's a very good book, well worth reading if you're a healthcare professional. And also if you're a human, because aging, death, dying and death will hit us all at some stage. So this book makes you think about how we can make the whole experience better. Have a read. Slide 40. Take out some insurance on me, baby. Another great Beatles hit. And here's where I'll talk about some papers, research papers and things. 2010, New England Journal of Medicine published early palliative care for patients with metastatic non-small cell lung cancer. This paper sort of led to a bit of a paradigm shift. So what's it all about? Well, in summary, you can read the paper yourself. I've got the reference there. But the summarization of it is that early palliative care involvements in stage 4 non-small cell lung cancer actually led to improved mortality. People who received palliative care earlier on actually lived longer. This really shook the oncological world back in 2010 and has led towards what we see on the right-hand side of the page, integration of palliative care into standard oncology care in the lung cancer setting, but now they've tried it out in other cancer settings, so anyone with advanced solid tumours, they recommend early palliative care involvement. So this was a statement from ASCO, the American Society of Clinical Oncology. They now are supportive of palliative care involvement in all advanced cancers patients because it actually results in better outcomes, and that's what we're all about, isn't it, people? We want to try to have better outcomes for our shared patients. So a more proactive approach in terms of palliative care is required, and there's lots of projects underway. So tell me why another Beatles hit. So it's happening with solid tumours, as I say on the left, given the mounting evidence, an integrated care model is required. How about in the hematology world? Well, it's actually happening in other places in the world as well, places far away like Wellington, New Zealand, Christchurch, New Zealand, even Hamilton. Building trust, concurrent use of palliative care and bone marrow transplants. So there's projects going on all over the world where people receiving treatments such as allogeneic stem cell transplants also get a palliative care referral done at the same time. Genetic stem cell transplants is a greater risk that these may not work, so possibly may need palliative care involved at an earlier stage. So there's actually trials going on all over the world, including in our own country, where people receiving allogeneic stem cells get a very early palliative care referral as well. Slide 42, please. The studies have shown that actually patients do benefit from having early palliative care involvement. They get better symptom control, there's less morbidity, so as the study on the right shows, effect of inpatient palliative care on quality of life. 2 weeks after a stem cell transplant, they have better quality of life, their symptoms are better controlled, and not just their physical symptoms, but as we said, the other three sides of the house will be attended to as well. So altogether now, palliative care and hematology services are working together, even in the stem cell transplant setting, to provide better care experiences for our shared patients. Slide 43, please. Got to get you into my life, so maybe, you know, hematology and other specialities need to get more palliative care into their lives. This slide illustrates an article from Blood, 2016, a journal that the hematologists in the audience will be very familiar with. Integrating palliative care in an outpatient hematology clinic increases patient satisfaction, adherence to care, and may decrease hospital admissions. Wouldn't that be lovely? Why don't we all have a read of this paper, see what you think about it, and maybe you need to get in touch with your local palliative care service to see what future directions that you can come up with together. Next slide, slide 44. This is not a Beatles song title, but this is something that I do believe in. You are what you think. So maybe it's time for us to think different. Think different about the things that we do, the ways that we work. Next slide, slide 45. We're almost there, heading towards the end of this talk. That's the way we've always done things. These seven words by themselves stop progress in many, many fields. In the business fields, in the healthcare fields, they stop people from trying something new. People are missing out because of this sort of attitude from various sides of the equation. So, and because of that, people are suffering. People are missing out on care that might actually help them earlier on. People are missing out on opportunities to possibly create better memories for themselves and their families. This is the point of the lecture where I say, so when do you think that John should have been referred to palliative care? Should it have been just in the last 30 days of his life, or could the referral have come earlier, like during the first relapse or the second relapse, or could it have actually been started right at diagnosis when he was diagnosed with painful back pain because of myeloma? The point I'm trying to get across is palliative care, we're happy to involve from diagnosis onwards because people may well have symptoms right from the very start or actually preceding the very start. So please think about us. We'd love to help. But in order for us to do this, maybe we need to go to the next slide, slide 46. That's what I think about. That's the way we've always done things. Stuff it. It's getting in the way of things. Maybe we need to rethink the way that we do things, and I'm talking about us in palliative care as well. Maybe we need to grow up a bit and, you know, maybe even get over ourselves because our own thoughts may be getting in the way of better patient care for our shared patients. So I want, you know, all of us in the audience to think about that. Slide 47, what it's all about is the spirit of collaboration. We need the both of us to get together so that we can hold this precious baby together with our hands. If we don't coordinate our efforts, who loses out? The patient, the family, our little communities of practice. Slide 48, please. Yellow Submarine, another Beatles hit. So the point I'm trying to illustrate is Beatles, with their singles, always had A-sides. Next slide, please. Slide 49. And this is the B-side for Yellow Submarine, a song called Eleanor Rigby, which you might be familiar with. The Beatles always had B-sides to their songs as well, so the A-side could still be you wanting to go for curative treatments, fine. But the B-side, maybe you want to hedge your bets if you're a betting person, maybe a dollar each way, a dollar on cure, but also a dollar on palliative care as well. But the B-side could be palliative care, A-side could be curative therapies. We can look together and work together, as illustrated in the next slide, 50. You don't have to stop curative therapy to start palliative care. Instead, they can proceed together. We often say that we are hoping for the best, but planning for the worst. So curative and palliative, maybe we can open both doors at the same time to see the sunshine through the doors. And, of course, at times there may be a transition that is required. Good old David Perez, my previous teacher back in med school, talks about a concept of when there is no more curative treatments available or active treatments available, maybe it's time for active palliative care. And the active word is key in that. Palliative care is not a passive form of care. It's a very active, proactive form of care. So maybe we can do this together. Slide 51. And this slide is dedicated to all the ladies out there who are doing the nursing jobs and all the other great jobs, doctoring and everything else. There's something in the way she moves. So this is Linda Hamilton in her breakout role in Terminator 2, Judgment Day. She was ready for action, and that's what palliative care nurses, hematology nurses, social workers, pharmacists, occupational therapists, physios out there, that's how I see you, you know, ladies who are here to make a difference. And when it comes to making a difference in patient care, maybe it's up to the nurses and other carers to lead the way. Us doctors are pretty slow. Pretty set in our ways with our concrete boots on and everything. It takes about 17 years for healthcare change to actually be bedded down. So maybe it's up to our nurses to get together, start talking and collaborating with each other because us doctors are a bit slow on it. So here's a challenge for the nurses. Next slide, 52. We all work very hard. Our jobs are hard. 8 days a week is what it feels like, but all work and no sleep makes Chris something, something, something is what the sign says. So this is my slide to remind us all that self-care and team care is essential. Look after yourselves, look after each other. We are doing difficult and stressful jobs. Next slide, 53, please. Here comes the sun. So at the end of John's life, we looked after him and his family, and he continued to deteriorate. He did get out of his delirium briefly. He was able to spend a little bit of time with his family, but he quickly deteriorated. We looked after him. End-of-life care was what was provided, and had to support the family. His youngest daughter had quite a tough time coping with the death of her dad. Which brings me to the next question. I've got a slide which shows the advanced care planning website, something that's been happening in our country. It's been promoted the last few years. Just a quick straw poll, ask the audience, so who's going to die in the audience? Anyone, anyone? So lots of hands get put up. Next question that I ask is, who's got an advanced care plan? And I can predict that there's probably five hands put up in each of your audiences. So, you know, we're healthcare professionals. We know that death is going to happen. Advanced care planning is a good thing to do, but how come we don't have advanced care plans for ourselves? If that's the case, what about our patients? Now, if they're going through life-limiting illnesses, isn't advanced care planning something that needs to be considered? Something for you to think about. Next slide, second to last, 54, Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. So this slide is just to illustrate that there's lots of healthcare stars out there, and one of the things that we've been doing in Auckland with the Palliative Outcomes Initiative, the POI project, the Auckland Regional Palliative Care Project, is mapping out our local networks. There's lots of stars out there who are involved in palliative care provision, but they may not know it yet. So maybe we need to map out our local networks so that we can form constellations of care. So a brief musical interlude, and then the lecture will be finished. Just bringing up my musical slide. Because what I want us all to do is illustrated by the next song and slide. Next slide, 55, please. Sorry about that, the CD skipped a bit. So that's what I want us to do, come together right now, not over me, but over our shared patients. The end of the slideshow, and I did have another slide just saying it's time for questions, so open the floor to questions, and if anyone wants to get in contact with me, it's james.yap, it's J-A-P, for Peter, at hospice.co.nz.